Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. In Ukraine last week, a hacker, or possibly someone who works for Russian intelligence, intercepted a cell phone call between two functionaries of the Washington regime, Jeffrey Pyatt, the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, and Victoria Nuland, the Jewish Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs, who was visiting Ukraine with the intention of overthrowing the government there. The hacker, or whatever he was, almost immediately arranged to have the intercepted conversation posted to YouTube, and it's gone viral from there. The controlled press made a big deal over Victoria Nuland's dismissive comment during the call about the weakness of the European Union. She said, F the EU! And naturally, the EU was miffed about that. So the media concentrated on that and pretty much ignored the really interesting thing about the conversation, probably on purpose, because the interesting part is a pretty damning indictment of U.S. meddling in Ukraine. We know The Intercept is true and accurate because the U.S. State Department issued an apology for the bad language directed at the European Union, using the preposterous excuse that Nuland spent time as a young woman on a Russian fishing boat and might have learned salty language there. Good grief, could any apology be less to the point or more pathetic than that? And the U.S. immediately blamed Russia for wiretapping the diplomats and releasing the recording, though they offered no proof that Russia had anything to do with it. An amazingly hypocritical complaint, considering what the NSA is doing to all of us these days. The really interesting thing about that conversation is that Victoria Nuland was essentially instructing the ambassador about which Ukrainian opposition figures should be chosen to lead the country, should the current U.S.-backed coup attempt be successful. That, and not the commonplace four-letter word that Nuland used, is the real news here. The Jewish-dominated regime in Washington is trying to do what Jewish financier George Soros tried and failed to do a few years ago when he funded his so-called Orange Revolution in Ukraine. They are trying to topple the Ukrainian government, which currently has close ties with Russia, and install a puppet regime which can be used someday as a pawn against Russia, and also place Ukraine under the thumb of the Jewish banking and media oligarchs who currently dominate the West, and get Ukraine to toe the line in other ways too, such as supporting the wars for Israeli hegemony continually raging in the Middle East, and accepting the suicidal multiracialism and mass immigration the oligarchs have forced on the West in order to decimate our race. In case you don't believe that Washington is behind the riots in Ukraine, even after hearing this intercepted conversation, consider this. Mass quantities of printed propaganda have been found among the protesters, with text and pictures nearly identical to pamphlets issued by U.S. intelligence and mass distributed in Egypt when the U.S. was pushing for the installation of the hated Mohamed Morsi regime there. These same change pamphlets, with appropriate language translations, of course, were also distributed by U.S. intelligence in Serbia and Syria when phony revolutions were being fomented there. And now they are being used in Ukraine. Don't fool yourself. Washington is actively plotting a coup in Ukraine in order to install a more obedient government there, and it's part of an ongoing decades-long program to bring the world under the domination of the same oligarchs who currently misrule the United States. Victoria Nuland, by the way, is married to infamous neocon warmonger Robert Kagan, also Jewish, who was a co-founder of the Project for the New American Century, architects and early proponents of the illegal war in Iraq. Nuland herself was implicated in the cover-up of the Benghazi attack. Her family's original surname was Noodleman. Ambassador Pyatt, though not a Jew, is an obedient servant of the system that signs his paychecks. I've been studying his efforts recently, and they are totally focused on convincing the Ukrainians to jettison Russia, join the EU, and align with the US. A speech he gave on October 29 at the National University of Kiev Moyla Academy is full of oily promises of money and foreign investment and more money that will fall from the skies, so long as Ukraine obeys orders and signs the association agreement with the EU that Washington is pushing. In the course of his long and tedious ramblings, he said, quote, "The United States supports the Ukrainian people's European choice. We are your friend in this enterprise, a sovereign, territorially sound, democratic, economically prosperous, and European Ukraine has always been at the center of our hopes for our bilateral relationship. We stand ready to help Ukraine's economy become connected to global markets, to help you strengthen your democratic processes and institutions, and to help you take advantage of the many changes coming your way." Close quote. Well, I suppose that not everything Ambassador Pyatt says is a lie. After all, U.S. missile bases and branches of Citibank are indeed changes. For about a decade now, a new Cold War has been brewing between the regime in Washington and Russia. But unlike the old Cold War, Russia no longer stands for communism or world conquest, and America no longer stands for freedom. In many ways, the old roles have been reversed. Russia is led by Vladimir Putin, who stands quite apart from, and in many ways opposed to, the Jewish-dominated United States. Putin is a nationalist. He puts Russia and Russians first. One of his first acts upon attaining power in Russia was to dispossess, and in some cases imprison, the Jewish oligarchs who had come to dominate Russia and strip her of her wealth under the U.S.-linked administration of Boris Yeltsin. Read the article by Justin Cowgill I published in National Vanguard magazine, "The Silent Coup," which details how the oligarchs were defeated. What Putin did was the equivalent of a nationalist president coming to power in the U.S. and imprisoning or exiling the heads of the Fed, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, CBS, Viacom, and all the rest of the vampires, and nationalizing their assets and ill-gotten gains. It was a real bloodless revolution. Putin has flaws, to be sure. He persecutes more radical nationalists. He wants to hold on to the remnants of Russia's old multiracial empire, and so must take an official non-racialist position. For political reasons, he can never question the righteousness of the so-called Great Patriotic War. But Putin has nevertheless stymied the plans of the illegal regime in Washington time and time again. In Syria, he stopped another Zionist war from starting. In Iran, he has blocked the warmongers again and again. He uses the national wealth to subsidize the birth of more white children. And Dmitry Rogozin, Putin's deputy prime minister, has openly called for an alliance of European peoples against threats from the Third World. In contrast, America is acting more and more like the old evil empire of the Soviet Union. Our foreign policy is warlike. At the behest of Israel, we repeatedly invade and occupy nations that never harmed us or posed the slightest threat to our security, sometimes fighting multiple wars, overt and covert, simultaneously. We spy on our own citizens to an extent never even dreamed of by the KGB. We imprison more of our population than any nation on earth, and we utterly ignore our own laws when it comes to flagrantly illegal acts by the financial oligarchs and by the government itself. we undermine any nation, from Iran to Serbia to now Russia, that wants to maintain its independence from the vipers of Wall Street and Hollywood. In fact, it's not even an exaggeration to say that the United States is now acting exactly the way Germany was accused of acting in World War II, trying to dominate the world by force. And worst of all, the Washington regime is encouraging and facilitating the genocide of the white race with all its power. One of the really refreshing things about Ukraine is that both major political factions in the country are nationalists. One side, now in power, sees their current close relationship with Russia as the best guarantee of independence and freedom for their people. The other has a deep distrust of Russia, partly because Ukraine was part of the old Tsarist Russian Empire and later a part of the Jewish-dominated Soviet Union, under which millions of Ukrainians were purposely starved to death to bring them more firmly under the heel of communism. I am sure the oligarchs who give the orders in D.C. hate Ukrainians as much as they hate white Americans. But their primary goal right now is to weaken Russia. Turning Ukraine into a puppet of the Jews' regime in Washington would be their fondest wish, and they are willing to hold their noses and pretend to befriend the pro-Western faction in Ukraine. The pro-EU, pro-Western Ukrainian nationalists are being fed supplies, probably weapons, and huge amounts of money. Some estimate $20 million a day by U.S. intelligence agencies in hopes of bringing Ukraine under the banker's yoke and putting a hostile government complete with American military bases right next to Russia. Russia is currently the most powerful enemy the oligarchs face, and they want to destroy her. That's what this is all about. The pro-EU, pro-US Ukrainian nationalists will be crushed as soon as they are no longer useful. They are being played for fools by the world's wealthiest ethnic group, the Jews, who have played this game again and again. Look at what happened to one-time U.S. allies Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein. That U.S. ally retirement plan is pretty damned harsh. I fully believe that Vladimir Putin, despite his flaws, is not a man who will ever bow down to the moneyed elite that raped his nation. He does not want Russia to be a slave province of the Jews' world plantation. And I also believe that the Jewish power structure cannot tolerate a nuclear-armed advanced superpower with a leader who has shown himself to be well aware of their predatory and genocidal game. And they will not forgive what Putin did to their kin just a decade ago. Therefore, I believe that a drive for war is coming, a war that could well be devastating for our race and nation. I believe that in that war, the United States will be on the side of slavery and genocide, and Russia will be on the other side. I believe that anti-Russian propaganda will increase dramatically in the next few years. I believe that the manipulation of the homosexuals and their allies to hate Russia, even though there are countries in which homosexual behavior is punishable by death, and neither the perverts nor the Jewish media show any particular outrage against them, is just the latest salvo in a propaganda war which is going to get much, much bigger. In Sochi, the media are even now grasping at any straw they can find to portray Putin as a monster or an incompetent. I believe that incidents may be staged using U.S. or U.K. or Israeli intelligence assets inside Russia and her government in which Americans will be harmed or killed and Russians blamed, with the purpose being to anger Americans and justify a coup or all-out war against Russia. My advice? Don't fall for the lies again. Warn your family members. Inoculate them against the propaganda that is coming. And in the meantime, do everything you can to build racial consciousness among our people. Teach them that the enemies trotted out and dangled before them on the television are not really our enemies. Our enemies are not in Tehran or Damascus or Moscow. Our enemies are in the counting houses of New York and the dream factories of Los Angeles. Our enemies are those who have stolen our state from us. Don't make war for that corrupt state. Don't help it engineer coups against other nations who never did us any harm. Other peoples, including non-white peoples, who stand opposed to the Jewish oligarchs, are not our enemies. Work for the day when we can reclaim our nation and have a real regime change in this country. Work for the day when Americans, Russians, Germans, and all the peoples of our European civilization will earn their freedom and self-determination once again. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the reconstituted National Alliance Membership Organization, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel, Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel, Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to keep on thinking free. Yeah.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Shout to the sky.